Podmoth.
If you're easily offended, this show may not be for you.
But if you're into that weird fun sh**, you've come to the right place.
You've been warned.
Are you there?
I'm Chris. I'm the believer.
I'm Cody. I'm the skeptic. Okay, stories. Let's get into it.
Hello! Welcome to BSP, Believer Skeptic Podcast.
The podcast where two idiots debate weird phenomena.
I'm Chris. I'm the believer.
I'm Cody. I'm the skeptic.
And if this is your first time listening to us, we're an LGBTQ paranormal comedy podcast and proud members of the Podmath Network. And this is a full episode.
Everything apparently is a full episode lately.
Oh my god. That being said, I screwed up the minisode a few times. Like, it took me 5 minutes to get the intro.
It was great. It was great. And so if you want to go hear some fun at the beginning, go listen to that thing. But yeah, for this one, we have a full episode coming at you, so we have found a Halloween-themed paranormal topic. We've got some really, really cool stories.
So then we'll go ahead and should we say what the topic is? We haven't gotten there yet.
I think we should. Who wants to do it?
All right, so we are talking about witches, all things witches. I mean, whether you believe or not, whether you're a witch or not, we all have some witchy tendencies or witchy practices, so I think we can all relate, but I think it's going to be a really fun topic.
I do too, and I have actually a group of Wiccan friends who a lot of them claim to be witches, and so if there's time, I might just tell of a couple of things that have happened there. I also have to do a quick disclaimer before we go any further that Chris and I are remote. He's at home and I'm still in Texas right now, and we are under a tornado watch. And so I can hear the thunder rumbling a little bit outside. So it might add some atmosphere, but if worse comes to worse and I suddenly have to evacuate, then I apologize.
Yeah. So be careful out there, and hopefully nothing happens. So, all right then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with that, should we get into drinks?
Yeah, let's do some drinks.
You go first. I went first last time, I believe. Yeah.
Okay. And I know you have a really cool one that you're excited about.
Yes, I am. And I'm looking up the name again because I keep on forgetting.
So what I did is I actually went to the store for this one and I found what is called a Wicked Grove Cranberry Cider. And I like it because it's wicked, which is perfect for Halloween. And also it has a picture of an apple with like an evil smiley face. So it just kind of reminds you of the Wicked Queen, you know, who was definitely a witch of a sort.
You mean, or the Wicked Witch, or the book by Gregory Maguire that the musical is based on.
Oh, yes. All of those things. I don't even know, but yeah, that's what I have. So yeah, if I didn't say, it's a cranberry hard cider, so I think it's going to be really good.
That sounds really good, yeah.
And I just realized that it's not a screw top.
Oh, and you don't have a bottle opener with you.
Oh, God.
All right.
Damn it.
While he attempts to open it and breaks furniture, I will tell you guys what I made. I was looking for something like witchy or something like Wiccan, that, you know, something that people use in their practice. And I came across a blog that has some kitchen witches that make their own recipes.
Oh, that's super cool.
So I got what they call it is a Focus Pocus Iced Rosemary Lemonade Potion, because rosemary is an herb or that can be used for focus, you know? So so I made my own basically concoction, basically a spell, you know, for focus. And that's what it is.
That's neat.
Yeah. So homemade, and it's amazing. Let me tell you.
Oh, I expected it to be like vibrant purple, but it's literally just like the most normal looking thing. It's just like beige.
Yeah. It's lemonade, but it has a rosemary simple syrup in it. So it's really good.
Ooh, that's good. So I actually texted my friend downstairs and was like, can you bring a bottle opener up here? So while you're getting your history going, that might happen and I might be able to open my drink.
All right. So then history. So to state the obvious, witches have been around since the beginning of time. The word itself derives from the old English words Wicca and Wicke, which are the masculine and feminine, respectively.
Do you know what it makes me think of?
What's that?
Like the DJ going, Wicca, Wicca, Wicca.
Oh, my God.
On a record player? That's really what I'm thinking.
Well, witch, the word witch, is believed to mean wise one.
Oh.
Some of the first people considered to be witches were people who use spells and call upon spirits in order to help bring about change. Of course, there was the fine line between those who were considered true witches or those who were considered natural healers, or as we know them in modern times, folk healers. Witches were said to be pagans who were doing the devil's work back in the day. One of the earliest mentions of witches and or witchcraft comes from the Christian Bible.
Is it really?
Yeah. In the first book of Samuel, we are told about King Saul, who was on a mission to find the witch of Endor in order to summon the deceased Samuel's spirit to help him defeat the Philistine army.
Oh my God, I've never heard this. And it was on Endor, where the Ewoks lived?
It's called. She's called the Witch of Endor. It's in the Bible.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. In the book of Exodus, it states, quote, "Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live," unquote. Mm. And side note, I am currently directing Carrie the musical, and there is a line in the show where Margaret, the mother, says that about Carrie.
Shut up.
Synchronicity. Absolutely. Much of the concepts of witchcraft and witches and its supposed evils derive from Christianity, and more specifically, the Old Testament laws against such practices. Today, Christian beliefs vary from absolute opposition to even non-belief, and what I read is even approved in some churches. Despite what those of us brought up Christian have been taught, malicious witchcraft and witches are typically forbidden. Historically, as we know, witches or accused witches did not fare so well, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
In Europe in the 1400s, many people were accused of witchcraft and had to confess under some very terrible, insufferable torture. Witches were more commonly unmarried women, widows, and any women who did not meet societal standards. Terrible fact of the day, within 160 years, up to 80,000 people were put to death in Europe, Germany having the highest rate as a result of the witch accusations.
Damn. And that's something that I actually read, too, was that this wasn't just confined to, like, you know, the U.S. and England. Like, it was all over Europe and even beyond.
Yeah. Well, just think about the Spanish Inquisition alone.
True.
In 1486, two German Dominicans monks, I believe, published the Melius Maleficarum, or translated, the Hammer of Witches, which was a guide on how to identify, hunt, and interrogate witches.
Wow. Witches float!
This publication has been said to be the culprit in making a kind of witch mania go viral and become the authority for Protestants and Catholics alike looking to run someone out of their community.
Damn.
As all good things do, like, let's say, smallpox, Protestants and all other European bullshittery, witch accusation made its way across the Atlantic. The most famous of these cases being the Salem Witch Trials of 1662 that took place in the U.S. state of Massachusetts. That history is quite extensive, so I won't get into it. But after all was said and done, around 150 people were accused, resulting in the executions of 18 of those people.
And that could be an episode unto itself. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Of the 150, six were men and the rest were women. In the state of Virginia in 1655, it was illegal to falsely accuse a person of witchcraft. Despite the law, there were a number of witchcraft trials within a 100-year period in Virginia. Thankfully, all of those that were accused were spared. A Hungarian folklorist provides four general categories for the reasons people were accused. 1. A person was caught in the act of sorcery, whether positive or negative. 2. A well-meaning sorcerer or healer lost their client's or authority's trust. 3. A person becomes suspicious of an enemy neighbor. That is so stupid.
Stupid.
Yeah. 4. A person was believed to be a witch who had an interest in witch beliefs or occultism, obviously. Harm against alleged witches is still well and alive today. In some countries, accusations of witchcraft have led to several violent and murderous situations. So, mm-hmm. In Tanzania alone, about 500 old women are murdered each year based on witchcraft and witch accusations.
Today?
Yes.
Oh, holy shit.
Yeah. So, yeah, we need some justice, some social justice for that kind of shit. I don't know why that's not being talked about.
Well, and you wouldn't be allowed to go to Tanzania then because you might die. Because old women.
Oh, bitch. You whore. Anyways.
I was like, oh, he didn't get it first.
Nope. So as you can see, modern day practitioners still have a hard time trying to get rid of the historical stigma related to witchcraft and witches. Practitioners today mostly use their powers for good in attempt to stop evil and or harm. Of course, there are those few that ruin the party using their attempts for more sinister means. And there you have some highlights of the history of witches and witchcraft.
There's so much. And I know, like, I was saying before, like, I have a few friends who practice or Wiccan, and they claim to be witches. And I know, like, sometimes we go and we sit at a friend's house outside and have dinner. And if the wind starts blowing, this actually happened. The wind started blowing and it was picking up and kind of being annoying. And one of the friends, she, like, holds her hand up and did something. And she was like, wind, stop. And at one point, the wind actually died down, and her friends who were with her was like, we always forget how powerful of a witch you are.
Yeah, and we'll get into all of that when we get to believer and skeptics.
I'm curious, yeah, because, I mean, admittedly, I feel like, well, wind can naturally die down on its own, but, of course, I'm not going to shit on my friends, and she's actually, they're very smart, and so,
unless
you know
they're
what?
Into that.
Yeah, that's right to the wind.
No, into shitting.
Oh, well, I was thinking of, like, queefing, because the wind.
Ew.
And I was like, wait, what's happening?
Anyway,
all right, so.
Your first story?
Yeah, for my first story, I'm actually focusing on a really famous witch, and I'll talk about a little bit why she's so famous at the end.
Okay.
There's no witch trials here. I wanted to
Ursula?
Find a story. Yeah, how did you know?
Yeah, Ursula the witch.
No, I'm not kidding. That's her name.
Shut up. Sea witch.
It's not a sea witch, but now that you say that, that is actually her name.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so I'm talking about Mother Shipton. Mother Shipton was born Ursula Sonthiel in 1488.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so it really could be.
That is my own witchiness that's coming to fruition here.
Well, I know, right? I want to look it up and see if the Disney Ursula was named after
this.
Yeah, right. Because it really could be. I didn't even think about that. So anyway, this is back in the 1400s. Now, it's believed that she was born during a violent thunderstorm in a cave on the banks of the River Nid in Knaresborough. The sources report that Ursula's mother, Agatha, was a poor and desolate 15-year-old orphan left with no means to support herself. They say that having fallen under the influences of the devil, Agatha engaged in an affair resulting in the birth of Ursula.
Can I say something here?
Sure, yeah.
With a name like Agatha and Ursula, what else are you born to be?
Yeah, what are you going to exactly? Her name might as well have just been witch.
yeah, for real. Or Sabrina or something
Yeah, or
like
Sabrina,
that.
Yeah. It makes me wonder, though, if this is the origin, because I know, like, Agatha Harkness is big on WandaVision, but this could be the origin of those names.
Yeah.
Yeah, so variations of the story claim that Agatha herself, the mother, was a witch and summoned the devil to conceive a child. Now, what makes it more mysterious is that the true origin of Ursula's father is unknown. In fact, Agatha refused to reveal him. At one point, she was forcibly brought before the local magistrate, but still refused to disclose his identity. So it's pretty mysterious. Now, back to Ursula's birth. The woman who delivered Ursula spoke of a smell of sulfur and said that a great crack of thunder happened as the child came into the world. So basically, it smelled like ass.
I was going to say, did somebody just fart in the room? Or just eat boiled eggs or something?
And that's what happened as she was born. Now, so it just smelled like ass in the cave as she came in. Now, sources also state that Shipton, Ursula herself, cackled instead of cried after having been born. And as she did so,
she probably had a, what do you call it, coop?
The croup?
The croup, yeah. That's why she cackled.
She's like, but it said that the storms that were raging ceased when she did. So she was born, and instead of crying, she was like, and then the storms died. So this is all true.
Quote unquote.
Quote unquote.
Quote fingers, true.
Yes, true. This is all true. Now, I think one of the things that really lends itself to her really being called a witch was her appearance. Now, she was born misshapen and huge. Her nose was actually large and crooked like a witch. And her back, though, was bent and her legs were twisted. Her eyes actually bulged out of her head. So she was born very, very disformed. And so you can guess
that... Do you mean deformed?
What did I say?
Disformed.
Oh, disformed. She was reformed. Yeah, she was deformed. Now, the scandalous nature of Agatha's life and Ursula's birth and appearance, you know, meant the two were going to be ostracized from society and forced to live alone. So they lived in that cave for the first 2 years of Ursula's life. Now, rumors that Agatha was a witch and Ursula was a spawn of Satan were perpetuated due to the cave's well-known skull-shaped pool, which were said to turn things into stone. The cave is known still today as Mother Shipton's Cave, and people take tours of it. So this place really exists. Now,
that's cool.
After 2 years of living alone, the abbot of Beverly nearby intervened. The abbot removed them from the cave and secured Agatha in a convent, and then Ursula was placed into a foster family in Knaresborough. Mm. They would never see each other again. Physical differences, of course, acted as a visual reminder of all of her mess. So she found acceptance, luckily, with her foster family and a few friends, but she was ostracized and made fun of and bullied. So she found sanctuary in the woods like her mother and spent most of her childhood learning of plants and herbs and the medicinal properties around them.
She was a folk healer, like I said. You know?
Yeah. Then paranormal stuff starts happening around her. So this is around her childhood. It was claimed that whenever she was just two, so she was just moved into her foster home, that her foster mother left the house to run some errands and left her alone, while she returned to find the front door wide open. Afraid of what might be in the house, she called her neighbors to come help, and they heard a loud wailing like, and it says in this story, 1,000 cats in consort throughout the house.
That would be a little off-putting, to say the least.
Right? And her cradle was found empty. And after a frantic search of the house, her mother looked up to see her naked and cackling, perched on top of the iron bar where the pot hooks were fastened above the fireplace.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So she somehow climbed up above the fireplace. Now, there was another event whenever she was a little bit older, and the people of the parish were gathered together having a meeting, and at one point she walked past. The men stopped to mock her, calling her hag face and the devil's bastard. She kept walking to continue her errands, but as the men sat down to their meeting, the ruff on the neck of one of the principal men transformed, and a toilet seat clapped down over his head from out of nowhere.
Oh my God.
Oh, it gets worse. The man next to him started to laugh, and as he did, the hat that he was wearing suddenly turned into a chamber pot and dumped on his head.
Gross.
The gathered members of the parish began to laugh loudly enough that the master of the house came running to see what was happening. And when he tried to run through the door, he found himself blocked by a large pair of horns that had suddenly grown from his motherfucking head.
Oh my God.
This is Harry Potter shit. Like stuff going
insane.
On like that.
Yeah. This is like proverbial shitstorm.
I love it. I love this story. And so as she grew, so did her knowledge of plants and herbs. And she actually became a resource for the townspeople as an herbalist.
Absolutely.
And she earned respect. And she basically became known as Mother Shipton because she ended up meeting a local carpenter and getting married. And and a lot of people thought that because, you know, she was so deformed that she must have bewitched him to marry her. So, of course, that made more rumors, you know, swell and everything. But if, you know, good for Tony Shipton for marry her, you know. Now, finally, as her popularity grew, she grew bolder and revealed she could see the future. She started by making small prophecies involving her town and the people within. And as her prophecies came true, she began telling prophecies of the monarchy and the future of the world. In 1537, King Henry VIII wrote a letter to the Duke of Norfolk where he mentions a witch of York, believed by most to be Mother Shipton. And once you read about her, you'll see that it's wild we haven't heard of her, because her prophecies by some are seem to be, they're seem to be as prolific as Nostradamus. And a lot of people refer to her as the female Nostradamus. And she made predictions about the internet and about all kinds of things that people think, hold true. And so that's the crazy story of Mother Shipton. And I think, I don't know if you can hear that, if people can hear the sound, it is pouring rain and it is like hammering the window and I can hear the wind outside. So apologies for any of, it's actually making like, I want to turn off the light and make it creepy in here for witches.
So my first story, I'm going to tell you a story that I pulled from a book that I've been needing a reason to use for a long time. I actually remember reading this book as a kid, which back then this book scared the shit out of me. The book is called Witchcraft in the Southwest by Mark Simmons, that was published in the 1970s at some point.
That's super cool.
Yeah, as always, you can find our references in our show notes on our website, which this will be posted there. So in this story, a fruit vendor named Felix was leaving his work for the day. It was late at night, and he was carrying all his profits, which made him feel uneasy. He also didn't want to stay at his fruit stand for the night, where he could possibly also get robbed or murdered. So he left, and on his journey home, he saw light coming from a house, which he approached, asking if he could lodge there for the night. Two women answered his call and invited him in, feeding him and asking him to stay the night. Despite their hospitality, Felix just had an odd feeling about the place. In looking around, he noticed a strange cupboard in the corner of one room filled with small boxes. At the end of the night, one of the women showed Felix to his bedroom, which was next to the room with the cupboard. Still feeling uneasy, the man placed his pistol under his pillow before going to sleep. He woke up later in the night to find the door to his room slightly open, through where he could see the two women drying dishes. After doing so, the women sat down for a rest, one saying to the other that Felix must be asleep by now. Felix was taken aback by this because he thought maybe they were planning to kill him or rob him or something of that sort. Felix continued to watch the women as they retrieved two boxes from the cupboard, removed their clothes, and lathered their bodies with a powder from the boxes.
Was this a witch story or is this porno?
Right? It could go either way.
Yeah.
They then took three steps in one direction and then into the other direction. Then they got into a tub of water. As soon as they did this, they transformed into owls flying out of the house through the chimney.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe not porno.
That would be a weird porn, but you know, I'm not yucking anybody's yum, you know, whatever. Since they were now gone, Felix inspected the boxes, which apparently read magic powder, because you know people would just write that shit on there.
Just right on there. Yeah. Wow.
Not fully believing what he had just witnessed, Felix attempted the ritual himself to see what happened.
Whoa, I love that. Okay, this took a turn.
Just like the two women, he removed all his clothes and then covered his body with the powders and went through the exact motions, being careful not to miss a step. After jumping into the tub of water, he reemerged wet, not an owl, but still a man. Thinking to himself he must have done something wrong, he started to dry himself off when he noticed that he had a religious emblem and a scapular around his neck. He thought to himself that this was most likely the reason the ritual hadn't worked. Felix removed the objects from around his neck, only to again go through the ritual. This time, he began to feel different and could see that he, too, had been transformed into an owl.
Wow.
So Owl Felix flew up the chimney and made it to the roof where he could see the horses he had come on grazing.
Ooh, can we call him Fowlix?
Fowlix. Okay. Flying above the home, he joined a flock of owls. When they all landed, he states that they were in the presence of many owls and cats, all which he believed to be other witches. In seeing so many witches, he got frightened. Thinking they would discover who he was, he retreated back to the home immediately. Once there, he went through the ritual one last time, and luckily his form had returned to that of the original Felix. The next morning, Felix found the two women at the breakfast table waiting for him, when to his surprise, one asked him how he had enjoyed the party the night before.
Oh, shit.
The other told him that he best not speak of his experience, or a curse would be placed upon him. But here we are, hearing his story. He states he refused breakfast from the two women in case they had placed a curse on his food. The story ends with Felix saying that even though he has told the story at the time of writing, no harm had come to him. True story or cautionary tale? Who knows? Either way, very interesting indeed.
That's not a cautionary tale. That's like an encouragement tale. That's like, make sure you stay with creepy women and get naked with them because it's going to be awesome.
Until you turn into an owl.
Yeah, that'd be badass. This is like the best reverse cautionary tale ever.
For you, maybe. For probably, if, yeah. When I was a kid, like I said, this shit would scare the hell out of me, but you see why.
I do. I totally do. But now, yeah. That's a cool story. I love that. That's awesome, yeah. Chris. Yay. Yeah. All right. So for my second tale, I am actually going to be pulling a Chris and taking everybody to New Mexico. And there is a reason for this.
You actually did turn off the lights. I wasn't watching because I was reading my stuff, and I saw the lightning behind you.
Isn't it creepy?
Yeah.
But I am going to take a book out of Chris's page, and a page out of Chris's book, obviously the right way, and take you to New Mexico. And if you're wondering why, I am going to be talking about a place called, and we always called it Abiquiu, but it could be something pronounced differently.
No, that is correct. It's Abiquiu. It's a Native American name, and that is correct.
Yep. So. And the reason that I'm doing it is because back in my advertising agency days, whenever I lived in Dallas, we ended up landing the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum as a main client.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, Georgia O'Keeffe, the artist, did a lot of her work in Abiquiu and owned a ranch there.
Exactly. So we were commissioned basically to, or hired to build her website and to get a feel, you know, for just the whole brand, kind of the heads of each department. We got to fly out there and we got to tour Ghost Ranch, which was one of her homes, and Abiquiu, which was the other. And one of them, I thought it was Abiquiu, I'm trying to remember, it wasn't open for private tours or public tours. And so we were some of the only people who actually got to see this house.
That's amazing.
It was so amazing. It was such an experience. And we got to see where she worked and learn about her. And so it was so amazing that Chris found
all her vulvic flowers.
Yes, all of her veggie flowers. So whenever we found this story, Chris passed it on. I was like, I definitely want to talk about this because I know of the area. So Witches of Abiquiu.
And the funny thing is, I had never heard of this, and I live, or my birth home is only 20, 30 minutes from there, and I had never heard this story.
Me either. I had no idea this was a thing, and it turns out that this was actually, this was the last witch trial that happened in North America.
Yeah.
So I thought that was amazing. So, from the 15th through the 17th century, witchcraft flourished in Europe and America. While sensational, the 1692 witch trials of Salem occurred at the very end of the cycle of witch hunts. Yet Salem was not the last. 7 decades later and 2,000 miles away, the precarious town of Abiquiu in northern New Mexico, the last major witchcraft trial of North America unfolded.
Shit.
Between 1760 and 1766, some 36 men and women of indigenous background were accused of witchcraft and sorcery, of having a pact with the devil, and of having engaged in various activities that often were, to the people, you know, the people who colonized it, seemed very sketchy and devil-like. So,
like rimming?
Like rimming? No, that's not weird at all. That's very normal.
Witch!
Does she rim?
Oh, my
yes.
God.
She must be a witch. Oh, my God. Well, I guess I'm a witch then. I mean, what?
Oh, my God.
So, some history. The Spanish began to settle that area in the early 1730s, but it was inhabited by local Native Americans long before that. Yeah. The Genizaro Native Americans lived there and practiced a mixed form of Catholicism and their native religion after, of course, the Spanish settled. So, duh. And we've talked about this tons of times. Now, interestingly, practices such as confession and the idea of penance already existed in their native religion, which at first encouraged Catholics to accept and share their religion with the Native Americans.
Oh, so the Catholics took something from them for once.
I think I honestly want to say that, but I almost think it was more like, oh, well, you adhere to some of our beliefs, so we'll go ahead and teach you more of what you should be believing. You know, but
fuck some, colonization,
right? But some of the Native Americans in Abiquiu even became monks and religious leaders in the area. So this blending of religions worked for a while until the Spanish discovered that their new converts were were still practicing their native religion and had just added Catholic ideas and practices.
Yeah, and in case you didn't know, the Protestants brought converts from England to the U.S.
Right, only the low tops. The high tops were their own. They were already a part of the native culture.
Well, you don't need your moccasins. Here are some converts. Yeah,
here's some converts. You don't need to be quiet. You need to be uncomfortable. So in an attempt to preserve parts of their original culture, the Genizaros were still engaging in practices like human sacrifice, which when discovered, freaked the Spanish out. This discovery, coupled with the atmosphere of fear produced by Comanche raids, suddenly led the Catholic priests to believe that now Abiquiu was in the devil's snare. Now, it's important to note that native religions actually, they didn't believe in good versus evil. They had no concept of the devil. They believed in the interconnectedness of all things. So it's just interesting that suddenly, you know, of course, the colonials and everything were, you know, so read something into nothing, which happened a lot. Now, this is where the story really gets started. We're going to enter priest Holy Toledo. Now, that's not his real name, but it's appropriate. But his real name is Fray Juan Jose Toledo. A Franciscan priest from Mexico City had much experience as a missionary ministering to native people in Mexico and New Mexico. Mm-hmm. Nothing could have prepared him for what the fuck awaited him at Abiquiu. This would be his battle for religious and political authority in town. So, we're moving to Toledo's, I'm going to call him Toledo, Holy Toledo, because he's holy, his prime suspects. There was a Miguel Ontiveros called El Cojo for his limp, was known to be a powerful sorcerer. He and Augustin Tagle had Abiquiu in a spiritual death grip, at least according to Toledo. The devil was roaming free, devouring the souls of New Mexicans, and Toledo saw himself as the finger of God sent to cast out the roaring lion. He investigated the illnesses and other strange happenings in Abiquiu. But people who were afflicted by these so-called witches and sorcerers, they claimed to have a fever. They suffered great thirst. Their teeth would blacken and fall out, and in the end, they would die. Some of the victims' stomachs would burst open, letting loose insects of all sorts.
Gross.
Yeah, so boom, and then suddenly ants and shit. No one was immune from the evil, though, not even the priest. Toledo came under the spell of one of the Abiquiu witches, suffering physical pains and dark apparitions. At one point, he claimed one of the witches appeared in his room in the form of a half-human, half-animal abomination. He claimed the witch accosted him in bed and physically beat him. He ultimately sought a cure from an Indian curandera. Now, as word and concern spread about this battle being waged at Abiquiu, finally the governor had the main group of Abiquiu witches arrested. He also sent the case for review by the Inquisition in Mexico City to see if the Holy Office needed to intervene. But this actually had some good news. The response was pretty funny. The lawyer for that institution said that this was not witchcraft or sorcery. Rather, it was superstition born of lax catechizing by the priest. So basically, he's saying to the priest, yeah, you weren't doing your real job. And so there were no burnings at the stake in New Mexico. And so luckily, no one was murdered there. But it still was pretty sensational. And it sounds like Holy Toledo went through some shit.
Shit. Now that I know that, I just want to go back to Abiquiu and kind of maybe see where this happened, you know, see what kind of feelings I get. Maybe there's hauntings and all that shit. That's insane.
Yeah, I thought it was crazy. Thank you for sending that to me.
I'm glad I didn't read it.
yeah, me too. So, all right, so what you got?
Well, for my second story, I will be taking us to the small village of Trasmoz, located in the Aragon region of Spain.
Okay.
At one time, this village was thriving with a population of around 10,000 people. Today, that number has dwindled to under 100 occupants.
Wow.
So what happened? Well, during the 13th century, Trasmoz was a community that thrived as a result of the iron and silver mines, as well as the numerous wood and water reserves in the area. The village was also considered a lay territory, meaning that the Catholic Church had no power over this particular village.
Mm.
This didn't sit well with the church, of course, because that meant that under royal law, Trasmoz did not have to pay dues or taxes to the local monastery.
Oh, okay.
And this will become an important fact in a little bit. According to one resident, a self-proclaimed witch herself and a custodian at the local 13th century castle today, during that time, the people who occupied the castle were involved in the practice of forging coins.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. In order to keep their shady practice secret and to keep authorities from investigating, the occupants claimed that all the loud racket from the castle at night was due to witches and sorcerers.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And because of that, they claimed that the witches and sorcerers were rattling chains and making cauldrons to carry out magic potions.
Wow.
Somehow this claim worked, and thus the village was forever associated with witchcraft. Soon enough, the rumors of witchcraft began to spread, and with the Catholic Church already not happy with the town, the head monk of the local monastery made a request to the archbishop to excommunicate the village. In excommunicating this village, that meant that the residents would not be allowed to go to confession or take holy sacraments to the Catholic Church. Only an act of repentance could lift the excommunication stance, but the town refused to do so. Disputes would continue for years, almost to the point of war. Luckily, royalty was able to intervene to prevent the war from happening. Despite the intervention, the church would not forgive the village and asked permission of Pope Julius II to cast a curse over the village, based on their allegations that the town had been blinded by witchcraft.
Wow.
The Pope granted permission, and since a Pope gave permission, only a Pope could retract the curse.
Okay.
To this date, no Pope has done so.
Are you kidding?
Nope.
Unbelievable.
The years following, the village began being cursed were quite tumultuous for Trasmoz. For one, the castle burnt down and would remain in ruins for many years thereafter. Additionally, the Jews were expelled from Spain, further impacting Trasmoz and causing a decline from 10,000 residents to 62.
Damn.
Today, you will find the small village practically abandoned. There are no local shops, no school, there is one bar, and most of the houses are in disrepair. That being said, the village has embraced the long legacy of witchcraft, which has helped with tourism in the town.
Really? Oh, yeah. Cool.
The castle of Trasmoz has been rebuilt, and within there is a witchcraft museum and a gift shop that sells things such as brooms and cauldrons and all that good stuff.
Okay, I want to go. That's awesome. Yeah.
In the courtyard of the castle stands a statue of La Tia Casca, which has been said to be the last witch to be executed in Trasmoz in 1860. I could find very little information on La Tia Casca, but from what I could find, she was said to be the greatest and most feared witch of Trasmoz, who was blamed for an epidemic in the town, which neither a cure or explanation was found for, thus resulting in her execution. To further embrace the legacy, every summer Trasmoz hosts Feria de Brujería y Mágica, or Witchcraft and Magic Fair. At this fair, there are historical reenactments, parades, live music, magic shows, fireworks, and so on.
This is so fun!
Yeah, but one of the greatest highlights of the fair is the yearly tradition of giving the distinguished title of Bruja del Año, or Witch of the Year. This title is given to one resident for providing services to the community as well as for their talents in witchcraft, which they hold until the following year.
Neat!
To hold this title is seen almost like a badge of honor. Since the village is the only town in Spain to remain both excommunicated and cursed by the Catholic Church, it has become a sort of sanctuary for witches and witchcraft. So, if you happen to visit the Aragon region of Spain, make sure you stop by Trasmoz for all your witchy needs.
Wow, I feel like if people just even here knew that, like you just move there and practice and do your little celebrations. I hope you get a little witch sash for if you win the
yeah. Witch of the Year.
Witch of the Year. Like Chris was trying to find his mouth with his straw. And it made me laugh. It's like, wow, that is awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was a pretty cool story.
So are we on to Believer Skeptic?
Yes, I'm interested to see what you have to say.
Oh, well, I might be, just for the sake of time, cutting down just a little bit. But the one thing I did want to talk about is a Mother Shipton's cave. So the thing that I read about how the cave, the water in the cave actually turns things to stones, and it's like a big deal. Like people talk about this, and I found a lot of articles on it. Well, it's actually kind of true. So I can see why people back then would have been freaked out that you put something in this water and it ends up turning to stone. Like that to me is crazy. But after reading deeper on it, I actually found that there is, of course, an explanation. So the effects of the cave's pool are actually not those of true petrification, but they do closely resemble the process, or they appear to, but it actually is the process by which stalactites are formed.
Ah, that makes sense.
Yeah, where basically objects there are just coated with layers of minerals over and over and over, and in essence, they harden porous objects until they become hard and stone-like. So you put something in there.
It's like calcite.
Yeah, exactly. So the object itself isn't turned to stone. You know, it's basically kind of coated.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happens to objects in the cave. And so people back then would put something in the cave there, and then they would actually see it apparently turn to stone, and they would freak the fuck out. And I just love the idea that that actually happened. But the reason for it is something that's not supernatural. And that's, I'm going to leave it there because I don't want to poo-poo or anything on the idea of witches or Wiccans or people who practice, because again, I know that they've been persecuted and, you know, and a lot of them believe and it brings good to their life. So why not?
Yeah.
So go for it.
So right off the bat, witches exist, maybe not in the way many of us were taught to believe. I can attest to trying my hand in different practices, and I know plenty of other people who are witches as well. But what about witchcraft and all the things that come along with being a witch? According to one modern-day witch, she says that, quote, "A witch is simply someone who is aware of their own power and puts that power into action. Wicca and neo-paganism are real religions and practices just like any other religion."
Yeah.
You have to look at spells, incantations, or intentions just like prayer. In fact, some people probably equate them to the same thing as prayer, you know. It is just a delivery of words that is sent out into the universe to be heard and handled by a power greater than us. We get many misconceptions of what witches and witchcraft is due to religion, Hollywood bullshit, and of course the innumerable amount of witch trials that have happened over the years. Wicca is recognized here in the U.S. as an official religion, and some states observe Wiccan holidays, such as New Jersey, who recognizes 8 Wiccan holidays and excuses Wiccan kids from attending school on such days.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah. And just like many religions, Wicca is against using magic for malice and often discourages practice, as I said before. Today, there are many things that we as a society practice that may have at one time been considered witchcraft, such as throwing salt over your shoulder or putting a salve on a wound or even drinking chamomile tea, you know. In summary, witches and witchcraft are a long-held tradition that has been bestowed upon us by our ancestors and is nothing to hide from or fear. It has been a part of us for centuries and will live long and far past and beyond us.
Awesome. Well done. That's a great believer.
Yeah.
That makes me happy.
All right. So this week's Creep of the Week comes from Learn, one of our faithful listeners, who is a practitioner herself. If you're not already doing so, follow her on YouTube, Learn the Conjurer, because she has a lot of awesome videos and fun stuff to see. So here we go.
Hi, Chris and Cody.
Hi.
I hope that you are having a wonderful spooky season so far. Of course, it's October, so naturally I'm listening a lot to you. I've been replaying a few of your episodes, and I just wanted to remind you how wonderful and awesome you are. Thank you for being you. I am sending in a Creep of the Week that talks about one of my little adventures in my practice of witchcraft. Before I get into this story, a little disclaimer, if you will. I understand that everything that I'm about to share might not be believable to a lot of listeners. That is why this is called Believer Skeptic Podcast, however. So the great thing is people can make up whatever opinions they want. If nothing else, I just hope people enjoy and maybe take a little bit of heart from my story. I've been practicing as what I guess I would identify as a white witch for the better half of 7 years. How I would define a white witch is someone who only delves in cleansing rituals, anything that's positive, nothing dark, nothing negative. It's all good earthly juju. I am self-taught. I did not learn from anyone. I am not a part of a coven. I have saged a lot of houses. I have kept certain rituals to a very limited supply. I wouldn't say I am the most experienced witch. Certainly not. I have just leaned into my faith and spiritual practice when I have felt that times were tough, which is what I think a lot of people do. I find myself not very different in this story, where I felt incredibly helpless at the time, and I just pulled together my faith and power to what became a happy ending. I have a cat named Dita. Dita is 9 years old and was brought into my life when she was only 2 weeks old because she was found in a trash can. These two little girls found her and knocked on the rehearsal hall door that I was at and was asking if anyone could take this kitten. So naturally, because I turn to absolute goo when I see any baby animal, I immediately said yes. For the first couple of years, Dita had led a very healthy life, but as to be expected for kittens that were separated from their mothers very early on in their lives, she would eventually run into some health issues. I have done everything possible to make Dita comfortable in her life. I am a big animal lover and obviously want the best for my animal kids because they are exactly that, my kids. I had been practicing in my craft pretty religiously, no pun intended. I thought, follow through the motions of what I had learned. Through all of the knowledge that I collected about healing oneself, I had collected quite a bit of, albeit spells and rituals. When Dita randomly got very, very, very ill out of the blue, I felt so incredibly helpless. I had taken her to countless vet visits, had numerous tests done, basically had multiple opinions from different vets, and no one could tell me a thing. No one could tell me what was wrong with my animal. All anyone could confirm was that she was very ill and it looked like she would pass away soon. If we couldn't help her. I know that being a pet parent can be the most rewarding thing in the world. And I also know that when you are a pet parent, you want to do everything that you can to make sure that your animal has the best quality of life. So naturally, when this is all happening and when I'm doing everything I physically and physically can, and nothing was coming around, I felt the need to lean into my faith. I had sat for a considerable time not knowing where to go or what to do next. It was a split second of a moment, but I felt the words that I knew what to do, and I had to look in my books. So I began looking through all of the collected ritual books and spell books that I had documented over the years, and I began putting together what I thought would be the best healing ritual for my cat. Again, I am not an accomplished witch by any means, but I was always taught that when you feel something in your soul, allow your soul to guide you. I had all of these herbs, all of these oils, and strangely enough, in my box of candles, one of the candles that I had was a candle that was shaped just like a cat. I remember buying it years ago because I just thought it was a cute candle. But I saved it thinking maybe I could, you know, save it for something special. And this was it. I set out everything for my offerings and I burned the cat candle. I sat and I prayed and all I wished was for if Dita had to go, she would be not in pain. But I felt her life force wanting to stay. So I was doing everything I could to just pull in whatever healing energies were offering itself. And I just concentrated sending that healing energy to her. I fell asleep that night and she was with me. And the next day I woke up and she wasn't in the bed with me, which was strange because she didn't have a lot of strength at that point. So I didn't really know where she had gone. I walked out of the bedroom and she was sitting at the food bowl eating for the first time in a week. Now, obviously, I know a number of things could have happened within the 8 to 12 hour span between when I conjured the ritual versus that moment. But in that moment, I felt like I was given a gift. I felt like I had done something. And I felt like I was given such a wonderful feeling of knowing that my faith might have helped my animal. I've never felt anything quite like that since. Since then, Dita has been living an awesome life. She has been happy and healthy, gets all the love, and I'm hoping that we'll have a lot more time together. Thank you so much for letting me send you this story. I hope that it gave you a little bit of happy, warm, fuzzy feelings inside. Thank you once again for being so open and incredibly accepting to everyone and everything. Happy spooky season, boys. Bye.
Yeah, that was amazing. That was really sweet and touching. And I'm so, so happy that your kitty was okay.
All right, then. Well, with that, thank you, everybody, as always, for listening and for sending in stories. If you want to be heard on this podcast or you have an experience you'd like to share, please email us at bspodphx@gmail.com. You can find us on all your podcast platforms and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at bspodphx.
Awesome. And as always, my books, The Gay Teen's Guide to Defeating a Siren, are available on Amazon. There is a chapter in each of the books on something called the Pumpkin Bash that happens around Halloween, and it's some of my favorite chapters to write. And so if you want something that does have a little bit of Halloween-y in it, check those out. But that was a really cool episode. Turned out awesome. Yeah. So with that, everyone, have a happy and healthy Halloween, however you choose to celebrate it. Hope it's spooky, fun, awesome. And with that, bye.
See you again next time.